It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out today. Coming up later, we'll take a look at the economic impact of low gas prices. First, there's still time to grab a great book as a last-minute gift for someone on your list or maybe for yourself. And our next guest is here to help. Maureen Corrigan is a book critic for Public Radio's Fresh Air and an English professor and critic in residence at Georgetown University. She says the list this year isn't about big buzz or big size, but about great books in smallish packages. Maureen Corrigan joins us now. Maureen, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
Well, there were some heavy hitters with books out this year, names like Jonathan Franzen, and there were also just some pretty heavy books. City of Fire, I guess, clocked in at 900 pages. But those
yes.
weren't the books that made your list this year. Why not?
They weren't. I read both Purity and City on Fire, and I have to say that, you know, if I'm going to read 900 pages of a novel, it's really got to be spectacular. And I sound kind of snide there. I don't mean to dismiss Garth Risk Hallberg's achievement, but it's just not intense enough. It's not a spectacular enough reading experience to justify those 900 pages.
Well, what are you looking for when you make your best of the year picks?
You know, when I sit down at the end of a year and think back about all the books that I've read this year, I really want to think about the books that have stayed with me since I read them, maybe back in May or April, whatever. I also want to think about books that have taken me to a different place or made me think differently about things, that have just been innovative even in terms of their language and structure and characters. So a lot of books on my list this year are not the expected titles. And certainly even the books, as you just said, that generated a big buzz, like Go Set a Watchman, I've would rather forget rather than remember. But a lot of my books are memoirs, short story collections, one nonfiction history, and then a few novels that are really spectacular.
Well, all in all, would you consider the year 2015 a good year for books and readers?
I think it was a very good year for books. I think, once again, that as sometimes happens, the books that everybody expected to just, you know, sweep the reviews and be just outstanding in terms of sales and readers' response, that some of those books were disappointing, whereas others came to the fore.
Well, you said short story collections in particular rose to the top for you. What did you like this year?
Yeah, I loved Anthony Mara's The Czar of Love and Techno, which is a tough title. But, you know, Mara is a young writer who really broke out with this 2013 novel, A Constellation of Vital Phenomena. And this collection I like even better. They're interrelated stories. They start out in the Soviet Union in the 1930s with a character whose job it is to erase the images of dissidents from official photographs and portraits. And his brother is one of those dissidents. So this main character, Roman, sneakily starts inserting pictures, images of his brother behind Stalin, you know, into all of these official photographs. What's wonderful about Mara is his language is just ingenious. He creates characters who breathe. And these stories are linked. So we start out in the 1930s and we go up into the present through the device of some of these photographs and paintings that Roman has tinkered with.
So there's one short story collection, and there was another here that you liked.
Oh, a couple. Honeydew by Edith Perlman is fabulous. For readers out there who love, say, Barbara Pym, Lori Colwyn, these women who, you know, they just create worlds with their novels, with their short stories, mostly centered on women. I think of Edith Perlman as a luscious writer, and she's won so many awards for her short stories. One of the short stories that I particularly liked was called Assisted Living, about a woman who owns a resale shop, resale clothing and jewelry. And she sort of catches on that this shop has become something of a second home for two elderly, wealthy people who hang out there all day. One of the quotes that I used in a review of Honeydew for an earlier review for Fresh Air, I loved the way Perlman describes this elderly woman's voice. Her name is Muffy. It was as if Muffy had once been almost smothered and then allowed to live only if she'd limited her vocabulary and breathed hardly at all. I don't know. I've met women like that, you know. And I thought, yes. And I love Perlman because she's funny, too. I love writers who have that sort of wry sense of the world. The other short story collection that's a knockout and that is on so many people's lists this season is Lucia Berlin's A Manual for Cleaning Women. Berlin wrote short stories for much of her life, but she also worked as a cleaning woman. She worked as a switchboard operator. She worked in hospitals, you know, as kind of nursing assistants. She had those pink collar jobs that she writes about, but her stories are more than just sociology. They really bring to life these characters who are sort of on the fringe, trying to get by, and just because of their almost outsider status, they've got a really unusual take on work and on their fellow co-workers. They're terrific stories.
We're talking about the best books of 2015 with Maureen Corrigan. She's the book critic for Public Radio's Fresh Air and an English professor, critic in residence at Georgetown University. And, you know, we mentioned these short story collections, and some people just love short stories because they can take them in quickly. Other people really want to sink into a novel. So if you're not used to reading short stories, are these going to be accessible to you? Will you like them?
Oh, yeah, yeah. First of all, despite that title, The Czar of Love and Techno, which if I had been Mara's editor, nobody asked me, I would have said find another title because I find that off-putting. It almost is like a novel because the stories are interconnected. So you have the best of both worlds. You can read the discrete short story one at a time, but then you also have that sense of getting this panoramic view of life in the Soviet Union from the 1930s to the present. And Mara is also a writer who's got a wry sense of humor. So this really isn't a call to duty. It's a pleasure to read his writing.
So what if you just don't want to, you're not in the mood for a short story, even if it's linked, you want to sink into a novel, maybe a memoir. What about longer form stuff?
Oh, lots of great longer form stuff. Another book that's on everybody's list that I loved is a memoir called H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. If just listening to what this memoir is about, if I were a listener just hearing this and I heard me on the radio say, this is a memoir about a woman in Britain whose father died unexpectedly, and to overcome her grief, Helen MacDonald, the memoirist, decides to train a goshawk, a bird of prey, as a way of overcoming her depression over her father's death. I'd say, thanks, but no thanks. I have to tell you, I started reading this memoir, and it really felt like I was entering the Bronte's world. It's that same sense of you're out there in the wild with these people, and Helen MacDonald first and foremost among them, who just have a different way of coping, of seeing the world. I could care less about goshawks, but by page two, she sucked me in. So that's one that's really a standout.
That one surprised me. I started reading that as well. I'm not all the way through it yet, but it surprised me in that for the memoir genre, which I guess it falls under, it's surprisingly literary.
Yes, it is literary because she's also talking about literary representations of hawks, of these birds of prey, especially in the Camelot story. But she's not a writer who is so literary, who's so elite that you can't enter into her world. I mean, at bottom, what she's really talking about is dealing with grief, which is the subject of another memoir, Elizabeth Alexander's The Light of the World. Most people know Elizabeth Alexander because she read the poem at President Obama's first inauguration. She was the poet who read And her husband, who was an artist and a chef, Fikre Ghebreyesus was his name, died suddenly right after his 50th birthday. And this is a memoir, as much as it is about dealing with grief, it's also a celebration of a wonderful marriage. And she even includes recipes from her husband's restaurant, you know, to kind of just give you this sense of this full life that they live together. So I'm trying to sell it to people. I want people to be assured that it's not a downer in that sense. And I do also want to plug Bettyville, which is another memoir that sounds like it could be a downer, but is hysterical. Bettyville is a memoir by George Hodgman, who was an editor in New York, had a big career at Vanity Fair. And he moves back home to Missouri to take care of his 93-year-old mother, Betty. It's a little bit like Roz Chass' memoir of last year, Can't We Talk About Something Pleasant, More Pleasant. It's about the absurdity, the exhaustion, the totality of the experience of taking care of an elderly parent. And what's different in Hodgman's case is that he's gay, and that his mother and his late father never really acknowledged that he's gay. So here he is as a man, I guess, in his 50s, moving back home, moving into his childhood bedroom, and kind of falling back into the rut of this life that he lived as a child with his mother. And there's this big silence, you know, in the middle of this life that they're living together. I have given this book to three people I know who are dealing with caring for their elderly parents. I have a mother who's 96. This is a book to get you through. You will laugh. You will cry. It's a wonderful memoir.
And that one's called Bettyville. And Maureen Corrigan is with us right now. We're talking about the best books of 2015. Maureen is the book critic for Public Radio's Fresh Air and an English professor and critic in residence at Georgetown University. And we'd love to hear from you on this. What are your picks for the best books of 2015? Any surprises? Any disappointments? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page, and you'll also find Maureen Corrigan's list there of her picks if you'd like to refer back to that. On the first day of winter, it's prime reading time. We're taking stock of the best books of 2015 with Maureen Corrigan. She's the book critic for Public Radio's Fresh Air, and she's also an English professor and critic in residence at Georgetown University. And we'd love to hear from you on this. What couldn't you put down in the year 2015? And what book are you choosing if you're giving a book as a gift? What do you want to pass along to someone else because you loved it so much? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post your pick over on the Central Time Facebook page. And Maureen, I want to ask you, you've got one here about a dog. And this is one I have to tell you, which is prime on my list. I'm thinking about it for someone on my gift list. Tell us about this book about the World War II dog.
You know, talk about a book I can't stop thinking about, a story I can't stop thinking about since I first read it. It's called No Better Friend. And it's the story of Judy, who was a short-haired pointer who started out as a mascot on a British ship that was bombed during the evacuation of Shanghai. Judy went on to live for 3 years in a prisoner of war camp, a Japanese prisoner of war camp, with some of the men who she was with in Shanghai on that ship. And it is an incredible story. She's after the war, she was given, awards by the British government for courage. When she died, she was buried in an RAF flight jacket. Mm. I mean, I can barely talk about this story without tearing up. But she's the only dog who was officially recognized as a POW. And, I mean, the story is incredible. She's on two ships that were torpedoed. She survives both of those sinkings. She actually helps men who are injured in the water drags them to bits of debris. The story is written by Robert Weintraub, and it seems to be fairly, you know, well-sourced. He talks to men who are still around who remember Judy. He also, you know, has done his homework in terms of sources. And it's just, I kind of glibly called it the canine version of Unbroken, but it's one of those stories where you read it and you think, you know, there must be millions of stories like this where we have no idea what people went through. And this dog, according to some of the POWs who were in the camp with her, helped keep them alive. She sort of helped keep their spirits up, and she also helped keep them alive literally by going out at night and foraging and bringing back rats and other rodents that they would eat.
Yeah, that is an incredible story. It sounds like one that might even be for people who don't fancy themselves pet people, but who love history.
It's that great combination of a World War II story and, yeah, for those of us who are dog lovers, a great dog story.
Well, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line with us who wanted to bring up the book Dear Committee Members this year. This is another one I've started and I'm not all the way through. I realize now that I have to finish reading some of these books. But what do you think about that one?
I love that one. I thought it was a hoot. It's structured out of a series of recommendation letters that a professor at a small college has to write. So what an achievement to, especially in this day and age, to have a novel constructed out of letters, an epistolary novel. And the letters are hysterical. For anybody out there who's a teacher who, like me, has to write a lot of recommendation letters, you will just eat this novel up because the voice is right in terms of how you structure these official letters. But the brilliance is that a story unfolds through the series of letters as well.
We've got a caller on the line now. We've got Susan joining us in Medford. Susan, hi.
Hi.
What is your vote?
It's a great book. It's called Ebola Safari, and it's about a nurse who was combating the Ebola epidemic in Sierra Leone last Christmas.
Oh, that's a very timely one. And what did you like about this one, Susan?
Oh, it's really great. It goes into just a lot of detail. It makes us feel like we're actually there. You get to meet different patients. And, you know, honestly, I mean, people always say this, but I laughed and I cried because it had kind of covered the whole gamut.
And who is it by? Do you have the author handy?
Sure, yeah. It's by Richard Mertens.
Okay, Richard Mertens, and it's called Ebola Safari.
Correct.
And I think, Maureen, that this one may be pretty recent. Have you read this one yet?
I have not read this one. My nightmare in coming on this show is that everybody's going to call up and give me titles, and I'll have to say, I haven't read that.
Well, you've read
There's
a lot.
So much out there.
Right, and this one is Mertens for the last name of the author, we just found out. So that sounds like an interesting one. So speaking of which, Maureen, how big is your backlog of books that you still want to read?
Oh, I always have books that I want to read that I, you know, by my nightstand that just sort of grows incrementally decade by decade. When you asked me if this was a good year for books, every year is a good year for books. Some years are, you know, you have more of the standouts than others, but we just have an abundance of amazing writers and great stories in every genre. So, none of us should ever be at a loss for what to read. It's almost like there's too much to read.
Well, for people who are still shopping, what about anything for young readers, maybe young adults?
Oh, gosh, that is not my strong suit, despite the fact of having a 17-year-old daughter. Certainly the YA fiction is its own world. And I just have to defer to our listeners. It's not the world that I really know very well.
Well, there is one that sounded like it could sort of straddle some of these genres, but be for adults. Kazuo Ishiguro has one called The Buried Giant.
Mm-hmm. Loved it. I love his work. I think he first came to everyone's notice with The Remains of the Day. And I don't think anybody anybody sort of writes about loss, kind of the twilight world of sort of looking backward and yearning for what's lost, better than Kazuo Ishiguro. He's also amazing because it seems like with every different new novel, he sort of dips his toes into a different genre. And this novel is, you could classify it as fantasy. It's set in the Middle Ages. It follows two pilgrims who are going through this fantastic long landscape looking for their long-lost son. And, you know, they take a lot of wrong turns. They meet a lot of fantastic characters. But I'm someone who doesn't usually gravitate toward fantasy. But in Ishiguro's hands, this is so moving. And he just had me all the way through the journey.
Oh, it's a good recommendation. Maureen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Maureen Corrigan. She's book critic for Public Radio's Fresh Air, and she's an English professor and critic in residence at Georgetown University. And her picks for the best books of 2015, that article is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'd love for you to weigh in. Tell us what you think, what books you're passing on to other people, what books that you couldn't put down this year.